The Babylon Project podcast was our last best hope for reruns. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for fandom. The year is 2017. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor, and you're listening to the Babylon Project podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans. This is Raul Wybera with my good friend Jim Arrowwood, welcoming you to yet another Babylon Project podcast. How are you tonight, my friend?
Oh, yes. I'm doing well. Doing very well, as always.
That's great. Kind of sums up my state too, actually. Been able to get some rest. Feeling good.
I'm looking forward to recording this in the next two episodes. It's kind of a intense little trilogy.
Yeah, actually, it really much is a trilogy right in the middle of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who aren't aware, these three episodes are really the turning point for the whole show.
There is so much going on here that leads up to some really bad things.
And some really good things.
Good things and bad things. If things like that were to actually happen, it wouldn't be great.
No. But what episode tonight then? Let's set the scene.
Okay. We are going to look at Messages from Earth, the eighth episode of season three.
Mm-hmm. I got to ask you a question, though. Why are they calling it Messages from Earth? Aren't the messages coming from Mars?
Well, I actually think they're coming from Earth because of, well, we'll get into that towards the end of the episode. But what happens is we have an incident that doesn't go exactly, that isn't interpreted as it should be, resulting in something happening on Earth mm-hmm. that's going to have some long-range effects.
Long-range as in the next season and a half?
Yes. And yeah. Another, and then we have a visit from a person on the station who's been dispatched by Earth with some rather brutal messages.
That's true.
Well, yeah, it'll take two episodes to resolve that.
Right. Now that we've managed to confuse everyone, why don't we go ahead and give them some background so they can put that in context?
All right, here we go.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
Garibaldi and the Rangers bring Dr. Mary Kirkish on the station. Sheridan and the other members of the War Council meet with Dr. Kirkish, who tells them about a shadow vessel that her and her team of archaeologists discovered buried on Mars. Garibaldi confirms her story when he explained also seeing the same shadow ship as Dr. Kirkish had. Kirkish further explains that there has been yet another shadow ship uncovered on Jupiter's largest moon, Ganymede. Sheridan decides that the shadow vessel cannot be allowed to fall into President Clark's hands and takes the White Star to destroy it. When they arrive at Jupiter, it is almost too late, and Sheridan opens fire on the Shadow, which chases the White Star into the atmosphere, where the extreme pressures of the planet's interior destroys the Shadow vessel. As Sheridan attempts to leave Jupiter's atmosphere, his former ship, the Agamemnon, arrives and orders the White Star to stand down. The White Star opens a jump point inside the atmosphere and escapes. The Night Watch, which is gaining strength on the station, are a little suspicious about Sheridan's absence from Babylon 5. They ask Zack to question Garibaldi where Sheridan has been. Mike has lost trust in Zack as a result of being involved with the Night Watch and refuses to tell him anything. Meanwhile, laws are being enacted that allow people to make anonymous tips and accusations to Night Watch, and President Clark declares martial law on Earth. Jakar sits in lockup, singing and writing. Garibaldi stops by for a visit and learns that Jakar is writing about his experiences, and Garibaldi tells him that others in lockup are complaining about his singing. Well, there it is.
There it is.
Yeah.
It almost sounds calm compared to what we actually see when we watch the episode.
Oh yes. This goes deep.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy. It's easy to understand and easy to break down,
right.
But there's a lot of little things going on in here that we'll probably get into as time goes on.
Yep. Well, speaking of getting into, let's get into it, but let's go ahead and start it with our guest cast.
Character files opened.
Yes. First off, we have Nancy Stafford, who appears as Dr. Mary Kirkish.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot of credits to her name.
Actually, don't forget, at least not from our genre. She was a mainstay. She was a regular, I believe, on Matlock. I think that's the biggest claim to fame.
Yes, most of her work is outside of our genre. This is her only appearance on Babylon 5, and she did appear in an episode of Quantum Leap.
Right. But I know Matlock fans will remember her, certainly. And I think she was in and out on St. Elsewhere. No, not St. El. Yeah, the hospital medical show.
Ah.
That was one for me that was kind of hard to avoid. For some reason, when I was doing the clinical side, some of the two most popular shows that you would see was a lot of folks watching St. Elsewhere and, oh gosh, mm-hmm. What was the show with the medical examiner? Quincy.
Quincy?
Yeah. All these sick people in the hospital watching Quincy, of all things. The irony just reeked as far as I was concerned. Actually, a lot of us kind of made jokes about it.
Yeah, well, Jack Klugman, you can't deny Jack
Klugman. Oh no,
Klugman,
he's great.
The guy was just plain lovable.
He is totally great.
Mm-hmm.
And who else do we have?
Okay, Trekkies will be no stranger to this person, Vaughn Armstrong, as security guard number one. He's never given a name. He's just security guard number one. He appears and doesn't appear. He will also appear in the next episode, Point of No Return.
I wonder why they didn't name him.
I don't know. I don't suppose he really needed a name. He just needed the persona, which he filled perfectly. Go ahead.
I just had a thought. Uh-huh. Actually, that might have, you may have just given the reason why he didn't have a name.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning it wasn't an accident. It's the persona.
Yeah. Well, he was representing all of Night Watch, kind of all just balled up into one person, and he did it perfectly.
The SS, the brown shirts. Yeah.
And other credits to his name inside the genre would be Wonder Woman in 1978, a movie called Philadelphia Experiment from 1984. That's one of my favorite movies.
I remember that movie. I don't necessarily remember him in it, though.
I don't either, but, and nonetheless, he was in it. somewhere. A great movie, though.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He was in an episode of Quantum Leap in 1992. And as I said, no stranger to Trekkies, one episode of Next Generation, three episodes of Deep Space Nine, five episodes of Voyager, and 18 episodes of Enterprise, and has done a ton of voice work on video games. And
yep.
Anywhere there is a major Trek convention, Vaughn Armstrong is usually there.
I remember him from Enterprise, and I will say in all honesty, except for the opening credit music, Enterprise was a lot better than people gave it credit.
I liked Enterprise a lot. Yeah, he was Admiral Forrest.
Mm-hmm.
He did play a couple of other parts there in there too, but mostly he was Admiral Forrest, head of Starfleet for
right.
for what that matters. And at that time, but it was very, very sad when he was killed. They mm-hmm. they killed him off, and I'll tell you what, they played that very, very well.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. In fact, I think a significant number of people won't get upset with me when I say I liked it better than Voyager, but personally, I actually liked it better than DS9.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
But this is not the Vaughn Armstrong starring in Star
Trek. Or the
Star Trek episode.
Podcast.
Yeah. We're gonna be talking about Messages from Earth.
Messages from Earth.
Initiating plot analysis.
Well, speaking of messages, this show starts off with a rather interesting message.
It does.
It seems they're having some food problems on Babylon 5.
Well, some of them seem to be.
That was actually, I think they said yogurt. I thought that was what Straczynski had made a note of. That was actually a yogurt, but it sure didn't look appetizing on the plates.
No, not at all. It was blue. And
was
blue food is just not something that is great to see to begin with. And number two, it looked like yogurt that had been sitting out too long.
Too long. Yeah, like on the fifth or sixth take.
Yeah.
Lights.
It was really runny.
But why do I see what looks like fresh fruit on the other plates?
I know. And juice boxes.
And juice boxes.
Yes.
This goes to what I was arguing about last week on getting some of the food, you know, coffee and some of the stuff that they get in. I mean, as far as things being perishable and needing special care, oh, wait, though, on fruit. Babylon 5 is 5 miles long. They have farms on the inside.
Oh, well.
Raise
so then,
chickens.
So it's only the command staff that has to eat the overripe yogurt, I guess.
Just S-U-A-E-I, okay, Jim?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I pulled that clip, so.
Oh, gosh.
You know, I've been stuck in this tin can for 3 years. I haven't taken a vacation. Okay, it's my fault. I had to leave coming. I just didn't take it. I mean, the pay sucks. I knew that when I signed on, and nobody said I'd survive the job. Now, I'll give you all that. But where in my contract does it say that I have to eat the same food for breakfast every day for 3 years?
Paragraph 47, subsection 19, clause 9A. You can find it in the index under S-U-A-E-I.
S-U-A-E-I?
Shut up and eat it.
Excuse me, Commander.
What?
It's nothing.
I smell bacon and eggs.
Get out of here. Do you know how much it costs to bring eggs all the way out here before they spoil? I have tried for years. It can't... Eggs, definitely.
Oh.
It's from Marcus. It's nothing like that. I did him a favor. I helped get him an identicard so they could use some of the facilities on the station. And he asked what he could do for me in return, and I said, surprise me.
I can get anchovies. I can get olive oil, anything that's prepackaged. I haven't seen a fresh chicken egg in 3 years. I mean, cooked or otherwise.
And bacon? Forget it.
Look, if you want it, it's yours.
Oh, no, wouldn't dream of it. No, Go on. Eat.
Yeah, don't mind us.
We'll just sit right here.
Yeah, and watch.
I'm gonna kill him. After breakfast. If I can find him.
Which, that little bit kind of belies what comes after in the rest of the episode, but it's, it's kind of bracketed the humor there, the beginning and the end, and what happens in the middle is not real humorous.
No, but starts on a light note and wraps up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of bookend themselves.
Yes. And Susan gets bacon and eggs, and the boys are just going to sit and watch her. Now, if you watch in the background, when she pulls off that cover, heads start turning her way, you know, to show that, yes, the aroma of bacon and eggs is getting around.
Yep.
Okay, and she ends that bit with, I'm going to kill Marcus if I can find him, and my response to that is, get in line.
Yeah, because right now he's got a lot of people wanting to do the same thing.
Yes, he is getting attacked, but I'll tell you what, this guy, there's no stopping him.
Still a one-man army.
He is. Not only that, okay, but that last guy that he tackles in there, I'll tell you what, the Packers ought to sign this guy up. He'd be a perfect other side of the...
Hey, Wayne, a hint for you. Use your connections.
Yeah. He'd be great on the other side to go with Clay Matthews. I mean, he just blasted this guy. Did you also happen to notice, I think there was a little bit of a glitch, and I wonder if somebody actually didn't get hurt because Marcus hit one guy and bent his pike.
No, I did not notice that. With all the years I've rewatched it,
I'll tell you what, you go back and look at that fight, and it's right towards the beginning of the fight. Marcus's pike, it would be the part to his right, is bent enough to be noticed. And I think the guy he hit just before that, he must have hit him for real. So
unless hope, the pike was something, you know, really flimsy.
It could be, but... it wasn't that flimsy because it's bent. It's not.
It held the bend.
It's not creased. No.
Oh, whoa. I will say this, though. Why did Marcus send her on solo? If you've got a crowd following like that, I mean, he was lucky she wasn't killed.
Well, and why did Marcus not have somebody else with him at the time? I mean, why was he doing this by himself? I don't know. Maybe she only trusted him. Because of his role as a ranger or what it was, told her to run. But, you know, I don't know. I guess he thought that the only guys that he had to deal with were those.
Yeah, it could be. But, well, at least she's, you can see from his relief, she's still alive.
Yes.
And from there we cut to the opening credits. And were you paying attention to the stuff playing on the background? You know, they're talking about investigations and stuff on Clark. Uh-huh. But it was specifically the stuff that the Babylon 5 command staff has been digging out. Everything from the medical records to the shadow vessel, you know, all up to Clark not being there. So their little, Sheridan's little conspiracy of light has been dropping the bombs.
Well, of course, you know, Clark is going to deny everything, and he blames it on an attempt to destabilize the government from within and without.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
There's an element of truth there.
Well.
Though I don't think it's exactly the government that they're trying to.
No, they're trying to destabilize him.
Yeah, because he's kind of in the process of pulling off a coup there.
Right, exactly. He is
a shadowback.
Trying to become a dictator, and which would mean that he is the government.
Right. So that's why I said there's, you know, there's an element of truth. It's sort of in the, what was the phrase? From a certain point of view.
Yeah, yes.
But we're not going to go into a Star Wars discussion here.
No, because this is not the Star Wars podcast.
Yeah. One of the other things, you notice a new race posing a threat to planetary security.
Mm-hmm.
Where did we hear that bit before?
Enlighten me.
Huh?
Enlighten me.
Yeah, and extreme ranger, or sorry, extreme measures required. Yeah, remember the Psycor episode?
Uh-huh.
Maybe we can use this to our advantage?
Exactly, yeah.
When the video came out. Ah, except, gee, that new race might be you're right, they're probably a threat to planetary security, but they don't seem to be a threat to the Clark regime.
No. He is a bigger threat to planetary security.
Anyway, in spite of all that ominousness, we get a little information from Marcus. Apparently those attackers were pros.
Marcus is talking to Franklin. Franklin asks him who it was that did the attack, and Marcus said they are professionals.
Right. They didn't now, look they like were, it.
No, they look like lurkers.
Mm-hmm.
Upscale lurkers, but they were still, you know, down in the shadows and everything.
Well, it seems like they were trying to, meaning Marcus and the person waiting for the, Garibaldi's package. They were trying to bring her in quiet and through the back ways, so.
You think maybe they were henchmen for interplanetary expeditions?
We've seen them do some gray stuff before. Uh-huh. Or they could just be random. They could just be random pros. Maybe not on the full-time payroll, but I'd rather expect there to be a connection.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the next scene. A whole lot. I really, really like it.
It is. It's neat.
Yeah, because you've got someone who sings worse than I do.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's debatable. But you know
what?
We'll
find out next episode.
Next episode, we're going to find out, but we're not going to have a singing contest.
I do like the relationship that's kind of being built between Garibaldi and Chakar.
It seems to be mutually respectful.
Uh-huh.
I think Garibaldi is seeing some worth and is appreciating Jakar's transformation at this point.
Well, Jakar has faced his demons, and to a large degree from, you know, we talk about how these three episodes are a huge turning point for Jakar. His entire path is going to take a very different direction from where he had been.
Yeah, it's incredibly different, as a matter of fact.
And while he's sitting in jail, all of the demons that he's faced and the realizations, he is writing them down.
He's writing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Did you happen to notice the continuity glitch?
Yes, but do you know where the real continuity glitch is?
Well, it would be when Michael leaves, he goes to write with his right hand, and then they show a close-up of Jakar's hand, and it switches over to his left hand.
Narn is written from right to left, not left to right. So when they show him writing backwards, what appears to be... That's actually the correct way it should have been done. The problem is, you know, when he's sitting there in the whole prison cell writing, if they had flipped that entire frame there backwards, that would have been very obviously out of whack.
Yeah, they flipped it. They flipped it when they did the close-up on the hand.
Correct. Yeah, he got called out on that. And it's like, no, Narn's written in the other direction. So, yeah, we flipped it. But... It just happened that his writing at the one point, it was still in frame and you really couldn't do anything about that. So just hope people don't notice. Of course, with Babylon 5 fans, even back in the 90s when it was on videotape, people were parsing through every little bit of the episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we find out that the package Marcus had mentioned is for Garibaldi.
And that was mentioned back in episode 7, last episode.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Where he was waiting for a package from Mars.
Right. And apparently, Mike has seen something on Mars 7 years ago that this lady, that this package can confirm. And for those who don't know, this is also where he learned about the Psycor facility and met and worked with Jeff Sinclair for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of the comic series, which is considered canon.
You know, I when they were panning through the cast before they landed on her,
mm-hmm.
I thought that drum cadence was just awesome.
Right. It was. It was very good. It was a little overstated if you look at just this episode itself.
Mm-hmm.
But when you string all three episodes together, it really really increases that impact, because this is the kickoff point.
Yeah.
She gives her story. And of course, hardly a surprise, she works for IPX.
Yeah.
Interplanetary Expeditions.
Yep. Who's always looking for biotech.
And never seems very far away from the shadows. And in fact, they found this was the whole point of the comics. They find a buried shadow ship on Mars. And Sheridan pretty much sees through everything that Clark's doing as far as letting out the shadow story.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's using this partially as an excuse to clamp down and assume power.
Right. But we find out that there's also a ship on Ganymede that was just found,
mm-hmm.
At least by Planetary Expeditions. And, you know, I didn't realize Planetary Expeditions was doing that much in the Earth systems. I had always thought they were out further exploring.
Well, apparently they're a wide-reaching company.
Yeah, and a close-reaching one as well, it seems now.
Well, yeah, and they seem to be in bed with Morden, as you know, Clark, Morden, and all those mm-hmm. people, keeping things secret, because they did send Dr. Kirkish
right
into a bunker, basically,
on
so she couldn't
the Mars ship, yeah.
Yeah, so she couldn't see what was going on. And I'll tell you what, that looked like it might have been a horrible existence for the time she was in there.
Yeah, because you have to stay in the pressure suit and the breather apparatus.
And there isn't even a place to sit down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Frankly, that I don't think is anything compared to what crashed through her head, because the shadows sent another ship in to retrieve the one found.
Yeah, and that was a... and dig it out and free it.
Right. And what's important about her story is she seems like she's one of the last of the witnesses, because the witnesses keep inconveniently or conveniently, depending on who you are, dying.
And she knows that she could be next.
Right.
Her purpose was to make sure that somebody knew this.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody important knew this before they did get to her. After she said, after you get this information, doesn't matter what happens to me, you have to take care of this.
Yeah. I don't think it's just the humans, you know, Earth government that Clark's trying to keep this from, but he sure seems to be trying to circumvent the shadows as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a pretty dangerous game, frankly.
He's burning the candle at both ends. But you know, the Rangers are being very effective here.
Yeah, they getting the information, getting it out.
They're doing an awesome job. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. And Mike saw the Mars event, not the Ganymede, but he saw the Mars event. And one of the things he found, and this was like at the end of the comics, that Psi-Cor badge, that half-melted Psi-Cor badge.
Yeah. Clark and the court and the shadows, all three. Be afraid. Be very,
very
afraid.
Yes, sir. Oh, I don't want to say that anything yet, because there's just so much coming over the next three episodes. You know, we should have just done a 6-hour podcast on all three and gotten it over with. But
take a lot more than one cup of coffee to get through that
yeah.
one.
Yeah. Well.
Well, Kirkish, she's worried. Mm-hmm. Now she's worried. Concerned. She knows she's going to get found and killed.
Right.
But apparently that's not going to happen.
Protect, yeah. Dylan's going to protect her.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to get her out. She and her Rangers presumably, and take her to Mimbari and let her go native.
Well, why not? Till this whole thing blows over,
yep.
Which eventually it will one way or another.
Regardless though, for the moment, the White Council, which is, I believe, what they call it. No, the Council of Light. White Council's Lord of the Rings, of course. But they just got a huge whammy as far as the scale that this thing just jumped up to. It went from simmering discontent, staying under the radar to, okay, this is going to be all open and up front.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to ramp up now.
Yes, it is, very quickly. And now we get Von Armstrong.
Yes.
The Night Watch handler.
Our Night Watch boss walks in, and Zach, he's just sitting in the office manning the console. While Garibaldi's gone, he's head of security at that particular time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's second in command at this point, so.
Yeah.
God, he played that role creepy, though.
Oh, yes. I mean, he looks at the monitors and says, wow. I'm paraphrasing. He says, sitting here or being able to be here and watch all these people without them knowing about it makes you feel a little bit like God, doesn't it?
Yeah, and he's not saying it in a good way. There's some serious God complex there.
Well, yeah. Did you see Zach's smirk, though, when he walked out?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Zach was like, okay, what is this guy about?
Yeah. Zach is going to be getting into a more and more interesting place as, in particular, these two episodes progress.
Well, he's going to get forced into a position to choose.
Yep. Be careful who you get into bed with, and there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Right. Well, he's, it's kind of funny. He's paying very dearly for that 50 credits.
Yeah, the price keeps going up. This deal is getting worse. What was Lando's line? No, not Lando, but Lando.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Lando at Bespin. You know, you got a real Star Wars asphyxiation today.
I don't know why either. It's getting time for my biannual binge.
Ah, there you go.
Well, back on to Babylon 5. Sheridan has left his uniform, and he is going to go and take out the Shadow Vessel himself. Now, himself mm-hmm. and Delenn, in order to keep it out of Clark's hands, and the command crew is not exactly happy about that.
Not at all. And he's going to Ganymede, so he's going right into the Prime system, the Prime mm-hmm. planetary system, and he's taking a White Star, which nobody knows about.
Correct.
Except the very top echelons.
And the command crew is supposed to be covering his absence.
Mm-hmm. That he leaves that to Michael and Susan.
Whether things go right or goes wrong, they're supposed to cover his absence.
Mm-hmm.
Including if things really go wrong, I like the way he phrases that, biomass for the wreckage.
Yes, he'll supposedly have taken out a fighter, which will be blown up, and will have the correct amount of whatever biomass included in the wreckage in order to make sure that it looked like he was killed.
Mm-hmm. And then we go to the bridge of the... Okay, I'm sorry. I love the White Star. As far as I'm concerned, it's one of the best ships in space. We'll have to ask JP when we have him on next. But Starship bridges, in some ways, are just so boring. At least when they're done accurately. I mean, it's basically just the communication nexus in a lot of ways.
Yeah, pretty much. I'll tell you what. The one thing that I thought was the helm and navigator stations were way forward mm-hmm. of the command chair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though they kind of shift into a little bit better position when they go into combat.
But now we got to remember that B-5 was not a big budget thing,
mm-hmm.
and they had to make do. And so they
spent... It's still the coolest ship in space, in my opinion.
I think they spent more money on guest stars and their people than they did on sets.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Though I will admit, wrong. Command and control on B-5 C&C really does feel functional.
Oh, yes.
And I'd rather have that functional feel than just put in a lot of flashing lights just to make it seem
busy,
futuristic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or, oh God, it drives me nuts. When some series and a variety have done this, they just do weird things like lights on a glass floor or something like that just to go for appearance and completely throw out any concept of function.
Yeah. Well, just so you have some flashing lights in the back, one would hope that the talent would be where the attention of the audience is rather mm-hmm. than the surroundings. But then,
those surroundings become a distraction to the cast.
They can be, especially when you have fans that have watched these shows as much as we have.
Yeah.
We're
not talking about Babylon 5 here, folks, because they've actually done a pretty good job of avoiding that in a way.
Yeah. But, you know, you notice, as you watch things, you notice little imperfections here and there, mm-hmm. and it can't be helped.
Right.
That's where suspense of disbelief comes in.
Has to come in. Well, speaking of things getting suspended, Night Watch, Due Process in particular.
Oh, let's just go all the way and say civil rights.
Yeah. Apparently, Night Watch is being granted a bit of an expansion of operations.
Yeah.
Under the excuse that the enemies of Earth have sold out to the, quote, aliens, unquote.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And can you say irony?
Anybody, it extends to anybody, because if you listen to him, he's talking about going into people's emails, their everything, you know, your life is going to be an open book. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who or what you are, you know.
A surveillance society.
Yeah, and he is totally with the party line. It's becoming a dictatorship.
And as far as the people in Night Watch, that's a lot of station security in the room there.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we've seen Night Watch badges, armbands and stuff like that before. We've seen some Night Watch meetings before, and it was usually a smattering of security. They've been busy recruiting.
Yeah, we have not. We had quite a few in the meeting that was held a few episodes ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they weren't all wearing armbands. But, you know, hey, maybe there's a lot of people that need that 50 credits.
I'm less worried about the ones that are wearing the armband as I am the ones who aren't. If you remember at the end of season 2, that one gal who was not wearing the armband that had been there, we've seen her on and on, and no, she's Night Watch.
Uh-huh. But, yeah. And there we are looking for subversives, and subversives mean those that question Clark's policies.
Mm-hmm. History repeats itself. Susan Ivanova made a comment in one of the episodes. Doesn't anyone read the Santayana anymore?
Yeah, that's come up a couple of times.
Yeah. Oh, I can tell you from all experience, no, they don't. But Sheridan, back to his side of the story, seems to be asleep at the helm.
Yeah, he's sitting in his command chair, snoozing away.
At least he's not snoring this time. But Lanier convinces him to get some sleep.
Uh-huh. And finally he goes off, and oh boy, do we ever get an insight into what the Minbari...
Oh, God, the angled beds.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, and you know, he seemed to completely ignore, not pay any attention, and just conveniently ends up next to Delenn.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I couldn't sleep like that.
No.
There would be no way. First of all, the pillow is all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Just that little triangle, forget it. No.
Yeah, well, we see Susan's solution in a season.
Yes. She will have a solution to this problem, but she won't get any sleep either.
Nope. That tells you how tired Sheridan is, though. Dylan manages to get him some rain.
Yes, the rain helped to put him to sleep when he was young, when he had trouble sleeping, and he tells that neat little story about his dad.
That was a cool story.
Yeah, and it was when he couldn't sleep, his dad would go outside and take the garden hose and spray it up in the air so it hit the top of the house and it would sound like rain.
Right. But and it works here too. He's able to finally get some sleep.
Yes, because Dylan comes up with a recording of rain. Now, how would they just happen to have a recording of rain on board the ship? I don't know.
Maybe there's more similarities between Earth and Mimbar than meets the eye.
Yeah, that's very true.
And he drifts off to sleep with her watching over him. Which is actually, folks, rather significant if you haven't seen the entire series.
Yeah, they're getting closer and closer all the time.
And this is a very important part of that, though no one realizes it at the time. Okay, back to Babylon 5. We had mentioned it as bookends.
Yes.
Where Susan and Marcus, there's actually a spot in the middle, too.
It's brief.
It's brief. And it's actually really good heart-to-heart between the two. Because Marcus goes in to give a report since Susan's covering for Sheridan. She'll get the reports instead, and she's just a little distracted. But that said, badgers? Ferrets?
Yeah, badgers? We don't need no stinking badgers.
let's let Marcus do it himself. I'm not even going to try.
And according to one of our units on the border of Centauri space, they've continued massing their fleet. We don't know why. Maybe they expect a counterattack. It's hard to say. And they have much to be concerned about. There's always the threat of an attack by, say, a giant space dragon, the kind that eats the sun once every 30 days. It's a nuisance, but what can you expect from reptiles? Did I mention that my nose is on fire, and that I have 15 wild badgers living in my trousers? I'm sorry. Would you prefer ferrets?
What I'd prefer is for you to...
To what?
I don't know. I don't know how to relate to you, how you fit into anything here. I mean, where are you in the ranks? Above? Below?
Left? Right? In a box by the door? Doesn't matter. And that's not really the problem, is it?
If anything happens to the captain, I'm holding you personally responsible.
Because I sent him off on a suicide mission.
Ever since you've come here, we've had nothing but trouble. You're a loose cannon.
He went of his own free will. He didn't have to go.
Yes, he did, and you knew he would the second he found out what was going on.
I'd rather assumed he would send me. Funny that. But if you are right, and it was inevitable, why blame me?
Because we shouldn't have to be doing this. Because he didn't have any business taking out that ship without me there to help him. Because we're going up against our own government. I don't know where the hell I fit in anymore, much less you. And damn it, because I don't have anybody else to blame. It's time. They should almost be there by now.
Yeah, so we get to some of the source of Susan's relationship with some of her anger.
And she explains that she does not understand where he fits in the command structure. And he is not necessarily in Babylon 5's command structure.
No, he's definitely not.
He's a ranger. He answers to Dylan and Sheridan, or he answers to Sinclair.
Well, Ranger 1.
Ranger 1.
We don't know who Ranger 1 is yet.
Oh, yes, we do. We've talked about that.
Oh, yeah, we do. You're right. Well, we have a pretty good guess.
Yes, because we know that Sinclair was sent, and that's in the book, to dream in the City of Sorrows. Mm-hmm. Sinclair was sent there as an ambassador and wound up becoming the head of the Rangers.
Right.
So.
And one thing I'll note is it's not completely said, but it's real clear, at least in my opinion. Okay, I used to be a big fan of moonlighting, so okay, that probably biased, a little bit biased there. But she has more feelings for Marcus than she's willing to admit, I think.
She doesn't really know. right now. Marcus
no.
is Marcus is making advances. She gave him flowers. He misinterpreted why he got those flowers. And so, you know, he thinks he's got the inside track, and she doesn't want anything to do with him beyond a professional relationship.
I don't disagree with that last point, at least from a conscious perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But the way the anger reflects back, like she said, not having anyone else to blame. those kinds of situations are usually reserved for someone you feel at least some sort of closeness to.
I would go along with that.
So, like I said, it's not what she's admitting, it's what she's not admitting, in particular to herself.
So perhaps she's just as much angry at herself because of her feelings for him she's trying to deny.
Or at least put off.
Nah.
Deny. Actually, no, you're right. I think you got the right better word. Deny is probably the better word. Because with everything coming up, she doesn't have time or an interest in a relationship. And let's face it, she's had a pretty sucky track record in that anyway.
Yeah. Denial is more than just a river in Africa.
Oh, God. Well, it finishes with, as we heard, they should be there by now. And they are there. They are picking up they meaning Sheridan and DeLynn, are picking up transmissions from the site. It seems in one of the things that the vessels, shadow vessels, use living beings as their core, I guess, meaning their main CPU. And it sounds like they're trying to merge someone into that vessel to try and control it.
Yeah. You know, there's another problem here, another continuity problem. When they first start hearing the transmissions from the surface of Ganymede, the company, they're referring to themselves as IXP.
Huh?
Yes, they call themselves IXP.
Oh, I didn't know. I'd never noticed that.
I just, when I watched the episode this afternoon, I caught
it. Was this the first time you caught it?
Yeah, it is the first time I've caught it, because I was listening very closely to their broadcast. Yeah, check it out after the show. It's there.
Editors won't catch everything.
No, you know, and if I had had time, I'd have gotten a recording of it. But I didn't have time to get that done. Yeah.
Well, we'll save that for the feedback episode. Okay. The volunteer, apparently, DeLynn explains you have to be prepared a certain way. And we're going to find out a little about that, I think, in the future. But the volunteer wasn't prepared. Unlike the Mars case, the guy didn't die. He and the ship just go insane.
Yeah, it acts like a caged animal.
And what could be more interesting than an insane, enraged shadow vessel? yeah.
Nothing that I know of.
Wrecks the base, gets away, and Sheridan, for whatever insane reason, that word a lot, opens fire on it, knowing it's not going to do much.
Well, and no, but his reason is sound, because he doesn't want this thing going anywhere else. He wants to be in control of everything.
And he lures it away. Which apparently is his intent.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of insane, to use that word yet again, he's being Sheridan. He's got a plan.
Yeah. He's going to take his white star that has been untested, as Lanier points out, into Jupiter's atmosphere, hoping that the shadow vessel will follow.
Hoping that that shadow vessel is really, really insane and honked.
Or doesn't know what they're getting themselves into.
You know, under most circumstances, I might call that a bit lame, but at this point with where they are and what they have to work with, you make do with what you got.
Well, if your pilot, and we know now that a living person has to be at the core of this ship in order to control it, a shadow vessel, if that person has not been properly prepared, things are not going to go well. We're going to see an example of this.
It's a caged animal going wild.
Yeah, in the not too distant future, we're going to see somebody in that situation on board the station itself.
Right, right. And it works. They're able to barely get out.
Mm-hmm.
The shadow vessel isn't. And, well, let's just say people don't, you know, Jupiter is basically often considered a failed star.
Mm-hmm.
So you are talking absolutely incredible pressures. And anyone who knows about diving, it doesn't take a lot of depth to increase the pressure a huge amount.
Yeah.
So a little...
I understand that Jupiter, yeah, a failed star, it just doesn't have enough mass to ignite.
Right. That's the theory, at least. For those in the field, that field who, you know, there's others who have, you know, clearly question it, but it's mostly hydrogen. It puts out more energy than it receives. So, you know, that's sort of the basis behind it.
Incredible radiation problems. Yeah.
But the shadow vessel, the spider crab, as it's sometimes called, doesn't have enough control yet to pull out, overshoots, and more or less crumbles away.
Yeah, it disintegrates.
So mission accomplished. Success.
Yeah, and we're happy about this.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's time to get out of here.
Right.
Let's get out of Dodge and go back to the station, but we have a small problem.
Yeah. Who was it? Samuel Clemens, I believe, that said, no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Damn. Sheridan's old ship.
Yeah. It just had to be the Agamemnon, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. And in our notes, I had a little bit of a complaint here. It's like, well, wait a second. The White Star is supposed to be one of the fastest darn ships in space, and they can't outrun, you know, a combination of Mimbar and Vorlon technology, and they can't outrun a mere Earth destroyer. And yeah, Jim answered me on that one.
So perhaps they wouldn't have such an easy time getting away from the Agamemnon because they are in Jupiter's atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And there is heavy pressure and a lot of gravity. I mean, what didn't Lanier say something like 12 times Earth normal gravity?
Well, it gets a lot. Yeah. And this goes back into a little bit of distance has a huge impact.
Mm-hmm. And then friction from the atmosphere itself and perhaps radiation is a factor.
The point is, that you were making was the White Star really wasn't in a shape to run from anything. And you're probably right.
It had sustained some damage when it went into as it got deeper into the atmosphere. Lanier reported that hull integrity was down. There was some explosions. Yeah, lots of different things happening.
Yeah. The hull was actually starting to buckle. So there's going to be some repair work that needs to be done. Their solution is unique.
Actually comes from Delenn.
I think some of Sheridan's bad habits are starting to rub off on her. A jump point in atmosphere.
Yeah, and apparently that's not something you do because everybody kind of reacted like, oh, what?
Well, it's a lot of energy in the jump point, and that's a lot of hydrogen on Jupiter.
Yeah, but we are up here for an act of desperation.
And hopefully it's not a match. But yeah, it works. And they manage to rather shakily get out.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, and speaking of no good deed going unpunished, we get the ISN report after that.
Yep.
Wow. Pure lies about the events on Ganymede. And hey.
Yeah.
Garibaldi uses the same line I just used a few minutes ago about no good deed.
Right. Well, you know, and now we're seeing the news helping Clark, maybe, and without intending to at this point, helping Clark plant the seeds of paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
And paranoia is a really, really great weapon when you're trying to take over a government.
Right. It's a key weapon. We've seen that over and over and over again throughout history.
Well, yeah. And right here on the show, if we didn't have enough paranoia, we know that Clark is isolationist.
Mm-hmm.
There, all through the series, we've had trouble with, you know, people accepting the Minbari because of the war, the Centauri and Narn. There, I mean, we have a great deal of prejudice and going on here. And if you take that and use it as a weapon, it can be very effective.
And, you know, I am going to make a comment here because I know there's some people who've wondered, you know, we could take the events that are happening in Babylon 5 and draw a lot of parallels to our current administration here in the U.S. And I'm not even going to say which administration it is because who knows, maybe 20 years in the future, someone will dig out an archive of this and listen and think the same thing. Or you could take the episode and pull it to a lot of parallels to the last administration. And I've seen a lot of things. You can do it and bring it to the previous administration. And heck, I could easily bring it all the way. I can easily bring stark parallels back at least. See, I'm 54 years old now. So I could bring matching parallels back all the way to the administration that was president when I was born at the beginning of 1963. You know, that bit about Santayana, there's no need to bring it to any particular, to answer those people who've wondered, there's no need to bring it to any particular. Straczynski, as Jim has said a couple of times in the past, he's dealing with grand themes of history.
Well, yeah, and we do know from experience and by reading history that those that don't learn it tend to repeat it.
And even when you do learn it, history does still try to repeat itself. It's what we've learned from it to avoid it.
Oh, yes. Well, power corrupts.
Yeah, and absolute corruptly, just to finish that.
Yes.
And speaking about power and corrupting, poor Zach has got even more Night Watch problems.
Yes, and he's been told now straight out. He gets really upset and gets in the Night Watch boss gets right in his face and says, "Look, you know, these are my friends, and you want me to spy on them?" And you know they've checked his quarters and all this other stuff.
Yeah, Captain's under suspicion now.
Yeah, and he wants Zach to spy on Garibaldi. And he said, you know, Garibaldi brought Zach in, trained him, made him the officer he is, has tolerated his time on Night Watch, and Zach knows this. And you know, his loyalty is to Garibaldi, and it basically he gets the ultimatum. Well, it's either your friends or your job.
Yeah. Well, it's not even so much as your job. It's your friends or your country or your, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The guy is a real zealot.
Mm-hmm. And Zach is not going to do what this person wants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think the guy, I don't think, you know, like I said, they never give him a name, but he's, and I think this is one of the reasons why he doesn't have a name. He's not there, I believe, just for the power or just what's in it for him. The way he acts in private when it's just him and Zach, he's one of the ones that's the true believer.
Oh yes, he believes this stuff.
He truly believes, and that is the most dangerous enemy of all.
He's bought in hook, line, and sinker.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when the scene is over and just before it switches back to Susan and Marcus, Zach looks at that armband.
Yeah.
You know, and
grabs at it, actually.
And I thought, you know, is that armband getting a little tight now there, Zach?
The answer for that, I think that's exactly what's going through his mind right there.
Is that 50 credits now worth it?
Uh-huh. Well, we're going to find out tomorrow. So, well, tomorrow meaning the next episode.
The next episode.
Right. Okay, we end at least on a lighter note, almost.
Yes. Marcus has created an organizational chart to answer Susan's questions.
Let's just go straight to it.
Come.
I thought you might want to see this. As I recall, you were somewhat concerned about where I fit in the great organizational scheme of things. So I went to the effort of preparing this chart. Now then, here's you, right here, at the heart of everything, and why not? And here's me. This is the captain, here's Franklin, here's my mum and dad. They don't actually have anything to do with it, but it's a very good picture of them, don't you think?
Marcus.
I actually think I've come up with a way to explain the organizational structure of Babylon 5 using the Ottoman Empire as a model. Gets a little confusing around this bit here, but one has to start somewhere.
Why are you doing this?
Did it make you laugh?
Yes.
Then my job here is done. Have a good...
Yes.
Susan, quick, turn on ISN.
Monitor on. Find ISN.
And to confirm earlier reports, President Clark has signed a decree today declaring martial law throughout Earth Central, citing threats to planetary security. He's expected to provide information to support this action at a closed meeting of the full Earth Senate tomorrow. We repeat, Earth is now under martial law.
So it looks like we're going to go out on a very light note. You know, Marcus...
No, not with Joe Straczynski writing it.
Marcus explaining his organizational chart and telling Susan exactly where he fits into the scheme of things. Mm-hmm. And then we get this little bomb dropped at the end. Talk about some boom.
Yeah, that's what Clark has been leading up to this entire time.
Martial law. My goodness.
Complete seizure of power.
Well, not quite yet, though. Because,
at least on Earth.
Well, he still, if you remember what the news girl said, he still is going to consult Congress on, or the Senate on this.
Rarely, and I'm speaking from the perspective of an American for our listeners outside of the U.S., but rarely when a sitting president has made such declarations, at least as long as I've been alive and for century, you know, the couple of centuries that America has been around before that, has those consultations really mattered all that much?
No, of course not. But we're talking about a whole different scale of martial law here. It's not like sending the guard in or something like that. We have a planet-wide situation going on here where, you know, there's going to be curfews, there's going to be there's going to be compulsory search and seizures.
Well, we don't know exactly what that is. Right now, it just sounds like here at this point that it's just going to be a fairly deal with the emergency and get things fixed up.
Well,
that's how it sounds.
Yeah.
At this point.
I don't know. Martial law, that's pretty serious.
Of course, it never stays that way for long, does it?
Yeah, and it doesn't usually end well either.
No, but that's next episode.
Yes.
Well, the next two episodes.
Yep, and our next episode will be Point of No Return.
Yes. Any closing thoughts on this episode? I'm going to hold off on any closing thoughts here personally, but I'm going to obviously give you the chance. I'm going to hold off until the end of Severed Dreams.
Ah.
Because I kind of want to talk about that, my closing thoughts on this thing as a whole.
It is three episodes that are a trilogy. Thoughts on this? Well, it's the dawn of some very bad things getting ready to happen.
Yeah. Well, the whole premise of the series is the dawn of the third age of mankind.
Yes. We have a lot of manipulation going on, misinformation being put out and misinterpreted or interpreted exactly the way it's supposed to be. and not necessarily being accurate.
Right. And you know something? If it's the dawn of the third age, that means it's the end of the second.
Mm-hmm.
And Kosh has already told us how it will end.
Absolutely. In fire.
In fire.
So we did have some literal boom today.
It wasn't so much of a boom as a...
Okay. And we definitely had some figurative boom there at the end.
That definitely.
So we did have boom today.
Well, okay. Maybe in the political sense we did, but probably not in the Ivanovist sense.
Oh, okay. I'll go along with
so
that.
So I'm going to have to stand by no boom today.
Okay. But tomorrow, will we have boom tomorrow?
Oh, heck yes. We will have boom tomorrow.
There's always boom tomorrow.
You got it. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.